May it please the court. My name is Gary Brown, and I represent Appellant Thomas McKeithen in this matter. Mr. McKeithen complained to his supervisor that Randy Wilson had engaged in sexually harassing behavior, which also offended him on a religious basis, and it was offensive to him for that reason. That complaint to his supervisors was protected activity. It need not have been a formal complaint, but his conversation to a manager or defendant is enough to invoke the protections of Title VII against retaliation. And
but isn't the problem here that he didn't exhaust the retaliation claim?
Well, that is the argument made by the other side, Your Honor, and I would say several things to that point. The amended complaint itself, I believe, and perhaps I should start. In retrospect, I wish my arguments had been clearer about why they were in the opposition. However, there was only one argument by defendant as to retaliation, and that was that it was not exhausted. And that was the only target the plaintiff had at that point. Paragraph 41 of the amended complaint says that there is an inference that there was retaliation from the EEO complaint filed. And paragraph 42 says it would have been selected if retaliation had been on the form. So then...
But let me just focus the attention here, okay? You respond to the... I think in our order scheduling this week, asked you to focus on Hamilton, which you do in your brief, but I didn't see any response to what is the core of Hamilton, at least for your case, which is that the letter at Joint Appendix 11 from the EEO office, which defined what the issue was and didn't mention retaliation, asked the plaintiff to respond. If that wasn't correct, then he didn't. And Hamilton essentially says that's the end of the matter for purposes of exhaustion. And then his affidavit just confirms that. So,
I'm sorry, Runner. And then?
Well, go ahead with the Hamilton question.
I think Hamilton has a...
What the government pointed out in its brief, and you didn't... Did you file a reply brief? You didn't, right?
I did not.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what the government pointed out. They said that your problem here is this letter from the EEO office at Joint Appendix 11, right? You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, Your Honor, and the disagreement about the letter is significant, I think, because first of all, it attempts to engage a lay person in...
What about Hamilton?
Excuse me?
What about our decision in Hamilton?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I just didn't hear that.
Our decision in Hamilton? I'm sorry. Let me get this closer. How's that?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Our Hamilton decision.
The decision in Hamilton...
Yeah, which says that... which was exactly the same situation. There was a letter like this that said the following claim would be investigated, you know, and it didn't mention whatever it was that was issue. And then it said, if you believe that the claim has not been properly identified, notify us within 10 days. That was exactly the issue in Hamilton.
Well, yes, Your Honor. The appellant in Hamilton was trying to revive facts that he had told to the EEO counselor that he had not put down on the formal EEO complaint. Mm-hmm. I think that's a significant difference right there. The letter itself is a defective attempt by an agency to limit the number of issues that it needs to investigate by taking advantage of a pro se plaintiff. That is basically... or pro se complaint, and that is basically the argument against that letter. It eliminates claims inconsistently with the EEOC regulations, 29 CFR 1614, 107B requires any agency which dismisses claims to identify those claims it's dismissing and to identify the reasons for it, which would, in fact, preserve those claims for the complainant.
What is your theory about when Mr. McKeithen raised these issues before the EEOC? And when did he claim retaliation before the EEOC?
Well, Your Honor, it's not clear what Mr. McKeithen, as a layperson, understood about what retaliation means, but he certainly put the facts asserting a claim of retaliation within his EEO complaint. He talks about meeting with his supervisor, with a union person there, which raises it to a level, I think, that would establish protection for retaliation, and then says the following day, I was moved, which is one of the complaints that he had about how he was mistreated. At that point, Mr. McKeithen was pro se. The cases talk about...
What's the rule that you would have us follow? Anytime someone in front of the EEOC mentions anything that they've exhausted? I mean, they just come in and they say, they list 12 different things that happened and in a discussion with an EEO officer? And is that's exhausting there?
Well, Your Honor, that's really what I think my brief below addressed, is what exactly occurred that might create a protected activity for Mr. McKeithen. It is not a single comment, but he was not engaged in a single comment there. He was engaged in an event where his supervisor was showing around pornographic material. This, in addition...
What I'm getting at is, from the EEOC's perspective, what does he need to do to them, before them? What did McKeithen need to do before them? Or what does any complainant need to do before them to exhaust that avenue of relief?
The requirements are that he meet with an informal process with a counselor. It is intended...
And when he meets with them, is the mere fact that he brings up that a series of events that could be construed as retaliation, is that all he needs to do to exhaust his administrative remedy?
Well, not with the informal. But if he puts it in his formal complaint, yes,
that's
Your Honor.
Okay.
And the formal complaint did say sex and retaliation. So those were properly raised. But they were not, I mean, it is not the obligation. At that point, 5 days into or 15 days into the formal complaint process, for the agency to dismiss claims that on their face, superficially on their face, could have had merit. But that's what happened here. That's the problem with that letter. It's not, it didn't have a reason to dismiss those claims. So we couldn't put a reason in the letter to dismiss those claims as the EEOC would have required them to do. In fact, the letter itself was misleading. It didn't say if you don't raise these claims now, they're forever foreclosed. It said this is a claim we're going to investigate. It may not have been clear to Mr. McKeithen what he was passing up. I will try to save the rest of my time for
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Brian Hudak on behalf of appellee Davida Vance Cooks, the acting public printer of the USGPO. The GPO asked this court to affirm the district court's judgment dismissing McKeithen's Title VII retaliation claim under Rule 12b-6. And this is so for four separate and independent reasons. First, McKeithen waived his challenge to the agency's dispositive exhaustion arguments by failing to address them below. Second, McKeithen failed to exhaust his administrative remedies regarding a Title VII retaliation claim. Third, McKeithen's workplace complaints, even if he had exhausted.
Do you agree, though, that he told the EEOC of facts that made out a claim for retaliation?
No, Your Honor. In getting to the exhaustion point, a fair reading of his administrative complaint, and the agency is not resting on the form. It's right. Going into a reasonable reading of the narrative that he put before the EEO office.
Shows that bad things happened to him because of things that he had done at work, right?
No, Your Honor. It shows that bad things happened to him.
Because he complained.
Well, he complained, but he complained about not anything related to discrimination. He complained about surveillance by the Capitol Police Department, unlinked. He wasn't complaining about discrimination. And in this way, this case is similar to that confronted by the Fourth Circuit in Miles against Dell, where in that case, a employee had marked on her charge gender and pregnancy discrimination. And in her narrative, she talked about workplace complaints about her treatment. But the Fourth Circuit said that she hadn't exhausted a Title VII retaliation claim because a fair reading of her administrative charge revealed nothing about complaints about discrimination that could constitute opposition clause activity.
If we thought, and this is a motion to dismiss, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So we have to give all reasonable inference to the plaintiff.
Yes, Your Honor.
So let's assume that we thought that it was sufficient there. And the form that he had to fill out didn't have a box for retaliation, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So given all that, I mean, why isn't that enough?
Your Honor, that's not enough because a fair reading of his narrative did not put the EEO office on notice of retaliation.
We would give all the inferences to him.
Yes, Your Honor, but it then is worse than that in this case because the EEO office read his complaint, informed him what they believed the claim he was making was, because a lot of times.
So now you're focusing just on the letter, right?
Your Honor, I think it's either one is dispositive, but the failure of a response to the letter is exactly the scenario that this court addressed in Hamilton.
Has the agency corrected this form?
That's not in the record, Your Honor.
Well, do you know?
I do not know personally, Your Honor.
Why would they have a form that didn't have retaliation as one of the things to be checked off?
I can't answer that question, Your Honor. Uh-huh. But the letter that was sent to him clearly identified what claim they understood him to be making.
So if there had been a form like that in this case and he had checked the box retaliation, where are we? How does that change the analysis? I know it's not this case. Hypothetical.
Hypothetically, if he checked the box retaliation and included in his narrative some facts to allow the agency to
Let's imagine he had the very same facts that he had in his narrative now, but in my hypothetical, there is a form that has the box retaliation, and he has checked that.
Well, I think the EEO office is bound to read his submission that he has made as his formal complaint as a whole and interpret that and include the claims that they reasonably believe were stated.
And that's
what they should identify in the letter to him and give him the opportunity, as they did here, to allow him to correct it or amend it at any point during the 285-day process, which he didn't do. He never took the step to say, EEO office, you're wrong. You identify my claim incorrectly, even though the EEO office repeated it three times to him, twice on signed affidavits that he signed, acknowledging that he understood that was the claim that was being investigated.
So that's, from your point of view, that's all you need, right? You don't need all these other 4 points?
Yes, Your Honor, that is all we need. Unless the panel has other questions.
No, I do.
Chief.
Anything? No. Okay, thank you.
Would ask that the judgment be affirmed.
Thank you. Mr. Brown has a little time left, right? Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll try to speak quickly. It is disingenuous, I believe, to say that the reading of that claim supported an age discrimination, and that's the reason it got in there. On its face, it had age, sex, and religion. Sex and religion were discussed, but age was not. Retaliation forms were also the facts supporting retaliation were also there. Another problem with the letter is there are no consequences. I could read that letter without knowledge of the process and say, okay, well, that's what they're going to investigate. That's what they're going to investigate. How does that impact on my other claims that they're gone? Nothing is mentioned about the other claims. Nothing is given to him to say, respond to this or your claims are gone. We won't do anything. It's somewhat of a trap for somebody who's pro se and unfamiliar with the process, as he was. For those reasons.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Case is submitted. Thank you.